Hi, just want to welcome everybody. I know this is the first time that many of you are looking at me. But, you know, so I'm visiting from Los Angeles. I work with, you know, you must have met Swami Ishwarananda. So I work with him over there in that ashram. So today what we'll do is, I'm going to talk about something called Shanti Path. Shanti Path means peace invocation. And that is very, very important in anything that we do. If you have a meeting, whatever you do, if you chant that Shanti Path, then the mind becomes, the ambience of the mind is created, and the ambience is created also with the people who are there, so that they are receptive to what you are saying, plus you are receptive to what they are saying. So it's like a meeting of the minds. And that happens. So this is called a Shanti Path that we'll start. So let me first chant something to my Gurudev, my Swamiji, Chinmayananda, and then we'll start the class. So what I'm basically doing is preparing you for this. This is like a starting class for this book. And then if we have time, I can spend some time on meditation, and of course you can feel free to ask questions. You know, the word Om that we chant is very, very important. It's very potent, because if you look at the Upanishads, which are the highest teachings that the sages gave to their disciples on the Himalayan mountain tops, the Upanishads are the highest teaching, and they are called Vedanta. Vedanta means the ultimate, the acme of knowledge. So, and we are shooting for that highest state, that is to know who we are. And that's what we call self-realization, same thing. And this book is specifically tailored towards that. In fact, that's what Kaivalya means. Kaivalya's enlightenment. So, I will first chant chant something so that our mind is quiet, and then we'll start this. I'll start talking about this. So, we chant three Oms, and whenever you chant this Om, you chant it long and loud. And it's A-U-M. It's not O-M. It's Om. And why A-U-M? Because A stands for, according to the great sages, it represents the waking state. U stands for the dream state. And is closure. That stands for the deep sleep state. All of us go through these three states. So, what it's saying is that AUM represents the totality of all these states and all the names and forms that you see in those three states. And therefore, it represents the Lord Himself in manifested in the world. And then when you say Om, and then there is a silence in between, for example, Om, silence, Om, the silence represents the unmanifested form of the Lord. So you can understand that everything rises, everything starts off from the silence, reaches a peak, and dissolves back into the silence. And it goes on like that. Therefore, the silence represents the unmanifested God, which we call Brahman. And the AUM represents the manifestation of the Lord in this entire universe, in all these three realms. The waking, the dream, and the deep sleep states. So, when we chant Om, it's a very complete mantra. You know, normally when we do pujas and all that, we do mantras and we chant it to each deity, each god. But Om itself stands by itself as a mantra. That's how powerful it is. That's why it's a very important tool in meditation. Right? So, let us start off with that. We'll chant three Oms, loud, long, and we'll listen to what we are chanting. chant something that is asking the Lord to bless all of us so that we learn from each other. Om Sahana Vavatu, Om Sahana Vavatu. You can chant it after me if you like. Om Sahanau Bhunaktu, Om Sahanau Bhunaktu, Om Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastu, Mavidvishavahai, Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. What this basically is saying is asking the Lord, may my mind be available to you, may your mind be available to me, may this learning experience between each other go on in the most efficient way. That's all this prayer says. It is such a beautiful prayer. It's a good thing, you know, if you look at it, when you have a meeting and all that, you want all the minds to be in sync. Otherwise, there can be a lot of confusion and people have their own agenda and the meeting doesn't go on right. So when you chant this, it brings everything together. So let us move on. This text is called Kaivalya Upanishad, and Kaivalyam means the enlightenment. So in order to, as I explained, in order to create the proper ambience in the mind and to make the mind receptive to something that's going to go on, for example, learning this text, you need to invoke the blessings of the Lord before doing something, right? So it could be a meeting, it could be a talk, it could be an important event, it could be studying this text, as I said. Now, this particular thing that we are doing now, the opening thing is called a Shanti Pat, as I said. I chanted another Shanti Pat just now, right now. But the one in this text is a different one. And that's what I'm going to explain about. And then after that, you can ask me questions. Feel free to throw the questions as much as you can, no problem. Okay, you know, a great soul, one of the greatest sages that whom we follow, his name is Adi Shankaracharya. And Adi Shankaracharya, he has written so many texts. There's a text called Viveka Chudamani. Viveka Chudamani means that means it is the essence of the differentiative ability in your mind. That means to be able to tell what is right and what is wrong. To bring that to you. Just imagine what a nice thing it would be if you were able to tell what I should do and what I should not do immediately. That is called Viveka, that ability to do that. So this text, Viveka Chudamani, is about, it says crest jewel of, it says differentiation. Now the problem is, and then in that text he talks about a very beautiful thing. He talks about the vulnerability of a human being. And what's the vulnerability? He's saying that look at the animal world. A deer succumbing to the sense of hearing is attracted by certain sounds, and which the hunter uses that to his advantage to trap the deer. The sense of touch becomes the cause for the entrapment of an elephant, because that elephant is attracted to his mate. And the hunters dig a deep pit in the pathway of the elephant, which is searching for its mate. But because of that sense of touch, it wants to feel the touch of that she-elephant. It goes across that and falls into the pit. The sense of sight becomes the instrument of destruction of the moth. As many of you know, it flies right into the light and it gets burned up. Right? So the sense of sight becomes the instrument to destroy the moth, and that's attracted by the light. The honey bee is attracted by the smell of honey in the flower. People waiting for honey, waiting for that honey, they smoke away the bees and steal the honey. The taste of the bait at the end of a fish hook becomes the cause of the fish being caught and killed by the fisherman. So, my point is, sense of seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling. Each one of these animals had vulnerability to one of those senses. And because of that attraction to one of those senses, it fell into its own grave, dug its own grave, essentially. So Shankaracharya is saying, what about a human being? A human being has vulnerability from all the five senses. Seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling. There are five ways in which I can make a mistake in the world, right? Of course, those five ways you can use it to your advantage if you know how to move around the world. So this Shanti part is a invocation to the Lord, also telling us to help us with these five senses. See, if you are unable to control, if we are unable to control our senses and turn our gaze inwards, the senses go outwards and get caught. Just like these animals, we get caught into the snare of the world and we suffer its consequences unless we know how to deal with it. So that's the idea. So in order to be able to do that, this book, of course, tells you how to deal with a lot of things. It's a very, very, it's an extremely beautiful book. It's very short, concise, but the language is quite, in other words, it's short and to the point. But it's got a lot of stuff in it. Okay. So let us see, when we hear, we ask the Lord, and the Lord means, you know, there are presiding deities for each organ. For example, the sense of sight, the sense of smell, taste, touch, all those things. So here, this Shanti part that I'm going to talk about invokes the presence of all of them to help us deal with this in the most effective way. So let's see what it says. It starts, as I said, with the word Om, A-U-M. And that invokes, you know what Om is actually? It's a hello God. You're calling, this is the way you invoke the Lord. So if you want to say hello God, it's Om. And the moment you say Om, God is listening. And then we need to say what we have to say. So what is he asking for? This prayer is also unique in the sense it asks directly for experiencing only spiritually enhancing sense perceptions with our instruments through the eyes, ears, etc. It also asks for good health, that we may use this body to serve the Lord in many ways that are available. And when I say serve the Lord, serving humanity is serving the Lord. In those days where this book text was written, the Vedic gods were invoked. So you'll see no names of Krishna, all those, Rama, Jesus, nothing is in that. But you'll see only the other powers, like the sun, you know, the lord of the devas. The devas are another group of gods. They who are responsible for all our sense perceptions. All those names are invoked. So I'm going to chant it and show you how it sounds first. Om Bhadram Karne Bishrunayama Devaha Bhadram Pashe Bhakshabir Yajatraha Stirairangaihi Tushtuvagam Sastanubi Vyase Madeva Hitam Yadayu Swastina Indro Vriddashravaha Swastina Pusha Vishwaveda Swastina Starkyo Arishtanemi Swastino Brahaspatir Tadatu. And it ends with Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. See, and what is the meaning of all this stuff? Om Bhadram. Bhadram means whatever is auspicious, whatever is holy, holier than anything else. Om Bhadram Karne Vishunayama Deva. That is, hey, O Lord, please ensure that with my ears, Shrunayama Deva, hey God, please make sure that with my ears I hear only auspicious things, only things that take me in your direction. Badram pasye makshabir yajatra. Oh Lord, make sure that I see only what is auspicious. So first thing is, hear what is auspicious. Second thing is, see what is auspicious. Sthirai rangaihi tushtuvagam sastanubihi. What is the meaning of that? That means, may all our limbs, my whole body, my hands, legs, everything, may they be functional. May they be in the best of health. May I be in the best of health. Why? So that I can offer my services to you. You notice, it's always towards the Lord. Remember, now, you know, so you'll ask yourself a question. So what does this do with what I'm doing every day? The point is that when you're doing something in that direction, all the things that you do every day also takes care. What am I saying? I am saying that as long as you keep this higher goal in your mind and then do your work with this higher goal in mind, everything will go in the right way because you have the blessing. See, you need the blessing of the Lord, plus you have to do your own, you have to put in the effort. You put in the effort and ask for help and it will come. If you just ask for help, it won't come. You have to make your effort and then invoke the presence of the Lord and it comes. And this is what this is all about. Okay, so if you look at each meaning of each thing, oh God, may we hear with our ears what is auspicious. May we see with our eyes what is auspicious and adorable. Adorable means in the sense that it makes your mind go introvert, not extrovert outside. And then maybe be prayerful in life. Maybe have an attitude of humility and love towards everybody. And there may be steadiness in our body and minds. And may we offer our entire lifespan allotted in your service. And as I said, when you offer your entire lifespan allotted in God's service and you do your work, everything will go well. Because your mindset will be so good, your attitude towards your work will be so good, everything that you do, the ambience in your mind will be created for you to do your work very, very well. See, you need that. Sometimes our minds are not properly set and we make mistakes. Very often you get up in the morning and do email and you make so many mistakes, you know. But if the first thing that you do is meditation and then go to the email, it makes a big difference. Because your mind is, you put your mind in a certain mindset that it's become calmer and it can look at more problems. It can see if you're making a mistake, if you're doing something wrong. But if you just jump into the email without that, then it's not invoking the higher thing. Okay, that is why it's very important to do this. So what does it say? It goes on to say, Swastina Indro Vriddha Shravaha. It says, Indra, in the olden days, in the Vedic days, Indra was supposed to be the overall god of all the devas. That means he's the king of the gods that take care of our sense of sight, of sense of smell, and all these five senses. So the king of all that is called Indra. So that is why this invocation goes to him. So may Indra of the Vedas of great wisdom grant us well-being by bestowing wisdom. Then the next thing he says, Swastina Pusha Vishwaveda. He says, Pusha. Pushan means the sun god. So invoking the presence of the sun god. And who is the sun god? He is also called the nourisher. Why is he called nourisher? Because the sun god nourishes the entire universe with energy. Blesses the plants, the animals without which we cannot survive. All our food comes from out there. Right? So everything. And it grants knowledge, because the sun god is also an instrument of knowledge. And then Swastina Starkshu Arishtanemihi says that Tarksha is a mythical bird and it has great protective power. He says, let that bird, that protective bird, grant us well-being. So that to protect us from misfortunes. And then the guru of the heavens, you know, for example, a guru is a spiritual preceptor, teacher. And such a preceptor can guide us spiritually so that we move along correctly in life. We do the right things, moving us in the right direction, towards our own self, to realize ourself. So that, so teacher, so it's also invoking the blessings of that teacher. Swasti no brihaspati hirdhatatu. Brihaspati is the guru. And then it ends with Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. You notice Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Three times the Shanti is done. And what is the meaning of those three Shantis? Because in general it is found that there are three sources of disturbances that normally come in the way of our doing something very, very important. For example, when you are in meditation, particularly in the olden days when the sages didn't sit inside the rooms, they sat outside to meditation and they sat on the hilltops. Okay, just imagine that scenario. When they sit there, there are the following things that can happen. You can have natural disasters, floods, earthquakes. Even here we can have earthquakes. Then the second disturbance is from outside you. I'm not talking about big disturbances. I'm not talking about earthquakes, floods. I'm talking about bad weather, itching in the body, mosquitoes, all those things. Because, you know, even when you sit down in meditation, you can have an itch and you don't know what to do. But it is a disturbance. It's a small disturbance, but it's a disturbance nevertheless, right? So therefore, that's the second kind of Shanti. And the third source of disturbance is from within you, from your own mind. Because your mind could be going somewhere else. Isn't it? So these three avenues of disturbances are, you're asking the Lord to bless you so that none of these three avenues of disturbances comes and affects your meditation. Okay? So this is how all this entire invocation. Now, and then of course, you know, this text talks about a lot of things about meditation. How do you do it? What is the posture? Where do you sit? How do you sit? All those things. So what I'm going to do right now is first ask you if you have any questions.
Talking about being auspicious, you know, seeing what's auspicious, hearing what's auspicious. As soon as you turn on the nightly news, that goes up to, that's destroyed. You more or less have to watch what you're doing all the time, don't you?
Yes. You're saying there are different ways in which you can get into trouble in the world, right? That you have to watch out for yourself. Yeah, that's right. Of course, you know, that's there. But, you know, I know there is that, but again, when you learn the art of meditation, you will learn also how to get away from that. Because, you know, you can't help it. That news will always be there. You'll always get bad thing coming on you. It's how you deal with it makes a difference. So news will come everywhere. You know, we all face problems. Somebody in our family could pass on, and that's a great disaster. But we have to learn to understand that we have to go on with life, right? It's always the case. It's a very realistic situation. But again, with that comes the support from this Upanishad, because it is telling you that we are not the physical body. That person that you're looking at, that is sitting there in the crematorium or wherever it is, or in the where the body is going to be buried, that person has already left the body. So once the life has left the body, the way you understand this, for example, in death, is that person has gone to get another body. Because, see, it's like you're living inside a house right now and you find everything is good, and then you have more kids or something like that, and you can't make it happen in the same house. So you need to move on. So what do? You move to a new house. So too, this physical body is there to set you on your way in this particular lifetime. But once the number of desires inside you goes up, then this physical body is not enough to exhaust those desires. Therefore, it has to take birth again. So it needs to move on. So with that understanding that person is going to another life, is moving on, that is how we have to handle that kind of situation. I hope I answered your question. And you know, then there are many other things like that, many other questions like you asked. You know, distractions are everywhere. See, this is there. The idea is this. If you do your meditation in the morning, okay, with using certain techniques, and then the rest of your day also you try to do work selflessly. That means do as much as you can to help others and take as little for yourself as you can. If you're able to do that, then these two balance off each other. They feed off each other. Because you're doing selfless work during the day, and that helps you in your meditation. Because your mind is very quiet during meditation. And then again, when you do your meditation, that brings more quietude in your mind. And that quietude helps you during the day, and so on. So if you balance your day, the way you handle things during the day, and then you do that meditation also, then they go hand in hand. So that's how you need to handle it. And you know, TV is a distraction, of course. And you will get bad news if you, I mean, and remember, everybody's, all those people, some people are trying to make money out of it. And we succumb to it because we enjoy the TV. So we want to look at it also. So we can't stop seeing it. So what you should do, you know what I occasionally do, even if I watch a program, I take a few moments away and I start doing a little bit of meditation and then go back. So I never get distracted completely only by the TV. Whatever is the program, maybe the commercials will come, and then that time period, spend a few quiet moments, then go back to the TV if you want. But you know, constantly don't keep watching that. And remember that the physical body is not, that we are not the body. That's a very, very important thing. And that is the truth. I didn't say it. The great saints said it. And it is validated through so many great souls who have gone through birth and death, birth and death. See, and the cycle of birth and death continues as long as you have desires. See, it is so logical. Because what else can you do? You're asking the Lord, please, save me from these desires. But the Lord is saying, if you've got desires, what can I do? I have to give you what you want. And therefore, because he has to give you what you want, you have to be born again. Because sometimes you cannot do all that with the same physical body that you have in this lifetime. Auspicious. You wanted to mean auspicious means that which is holier than holy. Think of that. That which is really, really super holy. And that means that's very, very pure. You know, if you can understand somebody who has no desires and whose only desire is the benefit is to do good for the world. Now, can you find such a person? Yes, you can. How do you find such a person? Because that person has realized the self. When you realize the self, you know what we call self-realization? When you realize that self, you reach that step, acme of bliss. You know, that's why it's called bliss. It's not called happiness. And that's why you say you get blissed out. At that stage, you're blissed out. There's no other way, because you know you're so complete in yourself, you don't need anything from this world to make yourself complete. Whereas we need something always. You know, we're always looking for something to find happiness. But when you reach that stage, everything is resolved, because that you don't need anything else. And what happens? It turns out that you're so blissed out that bliss is outpouring. It overflows into the world around you. That's why the great masters are able to give you their joy. Yes? So that's what I'm saying. So we should all, the idea is that to move in that direction always. Meditation is very, very, very important. You have to do that. And you know, in our culture, in the Hindu culture, for example, you have all these different gods and names and forms. Remember, those are all names and forms that you pray to, because I cannot see God the invisible. I can't see the unmanifested Lord. So these are all forms of God, like Krishna, Rama, Jesus Christ. All are different forms of God. Buddha. All are different forms of those people who have reached that stage. And when you reach that stage, it's as good as saying that is God manifested. That is the reason why Jesus is God. That is the reason why Krishna is God. That's the reason why Sri Rama is God. That's the reason why Buddha is also God. All those people have reached that stage. They don't want anything from the world. But in fact, if you just sit with them and talk with them, a little of that bliss will rub off on you. And if you follow their teachings, definitely it will help. Okay? So that's where all this is coming from. Yes. Okay, I'll tell you. Good question. Okay, you see, the word hale and hearty, why is it used? Because, you know, in our culture, it says that what you should do, you should dedicate your entire life to God. And in order to do that, I must be healthy enough to do God's work. So that health thing starts, is there to say that, hey, Lord, give me health so that I can do your work. Continue to do your work. It's not a prayer asking for good health. It is asking for good health as a reason for me to serve the Lord. It's a big difference. See, because good health is something else. Because, you know, you have to go to the doctor and then pray also. And then prayer also helps. All that helps. But this is not a prayer for that. This is a prayer intended for the person who is doing this invocation, who wants to live his life in the service of the Lord and service of the community. See, such a person is an asset to the community, isn't it? Because that person will do a lot of things for everybody. And it not only that, that person could be a doctor, he could be healing. So in that sense also he could be doing health work for the community. Okay, so it's not a prayer directly invoking the Lord to give you good health. But it's something there telling the Lord that make that along with the fact that, you know, because I want to totally dedicate my life to you. Therefore, how should I do that? I must have, please make sure that I hear good things. I see good things. When I say good, godly things, moving in that direction, spiritual things. So please make sure that my alignment is in that direction. And while my alignment is in direction and I have to do work with my hand and I want to do service for you, but make sure that I'm healthy enough to do that. Is it clear?
Yes, because I thought about Stephen Hawking.
Sorry?
I thought about Stephen Hawking.
Oh, okay. Such a great soul. Look at that. Even with that, even so much of handicap, but look at that. Isn't it? Yeah. It's amazing. Correct. Yes. Anybody else have any questions? Yes, I'll tell you that, what that means. See, our nature, everybody's nature is divine. That's the idea. The point is that God alone is real. You know, you say, how come I don't see God? But see, self-realization means realizing who you really are. Realizing your true self. Right? Now, how does that go? Right now, we don't know. We feel that we have this body. How do you know that? Because when I sit in a place and I feel uncomfortable and it's a little warm or something like that, oh, I need an air conditioner. I need some more comfort for my body. If somebody says something to me and then I take it so, immediately I react. When I react, you know, all this is called identification. You identify with your body, you identify with your mind, you identify with your intellect. Whereas these are your tools, these are not you. The body, the mind, the intellect are not you. They are your tools. You have to use that in the service of humanity, as I was saying. And using those tools, you have to realize who the real you is. The real you is nothing but the divine, God. God is the real you. Because God is not a form. God is a power and it's consciousness. Consciousness is everywhere. So every single thing that you see in this universe, every single thing, any being is nothing but God, God and God. Everything is the form of God. There's God all over this room. All the animals, the black widow spider, the scorpion. I'll give you a number of things. Even the criminal in the jail, the essence of that person is God. So what is it that makes one person different from the other? It is each person's mind. So if you fix the mind, that person slowly moves in this direction. You see, even in the Bible, doesn't it say, hate not the sinner, hate the sin. Why is that? Why is it said that? Because it is not, because that person as a whole, the nature of that person, the real essential nature is divinity, is the God in him. But somehow they have forgotten all that, and therefore you think you're this body, and you do everything with this body consciousness. Not, and when I say body consciousness, you think the world is separate from you. Even now we all think we are separate. See, we have our own names, we have our own families, we have our own jobs. So each one is a different thing. But remember, in and through that form, you have to be able to see in and through that form, understand that there is an essential divinity that links all of us. You know, I was talking about this yesterday. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that I am the string. I am the string that goes through the entire universe. And what's the meaning of that? That means I am threaded through every being in this universe. So everything, the essence of everything is the string. And he says that everybody else is threaded just like a bead on a string. All these, so we are all look, as we, as long as we think we are this body, we are like beads. But what should we do? We should understand that the string, which is in and through us, is the essence of our being, not the bead. If I take this necklace and I cut it, everything is scattered. All the beads are gone. If I think I am a bead, I can compare with the next bead. Oh, I am a bigger bead than that. I am a shinier bead than that. I am a pearl. I am a freshwater pearl. And that's just the other pearl. So you got all these different kinds of things, right? You compare and contrast. Why do you do that? Because you identify with your body and you think you're separate from the rest of the world. But the realization means understanding that everything is one. So that is what self-realization means. And see, you just look at the string analogy. Okay, I said this yesterday. If you take that, forget about the beads. Take the string itself and bead up the string so that it got these lumps in between. And now you try to unravel it. Is there a bead or is it all string? It's all string, isn't it? There was never a bead. See, it's our illusion. We think everything is, there's a bead, and we think of ourselves as the bead. So never think of yourself as the bead. Think of yourself as a string. All of us are part of the string. The entire universe is part of the string. And just imagine what kind of a vision you will have of this world if you understand that you're the string, not the bead. That everything is one. That's me in another form. That's me in another form. This is me in another form. That's the truth. That is the truth of the matter. Only the forms are different. The names are different. But the essence is the same. And that is what realization means. Self-realization. Knowing that is self-realization. Okay. You know, you probably have... Did Dr. Mehta tell you about the different methods of meditation or anything? The chanting the Om or... chanting the Om, right? Okay. See, let me give you one more thing that... I'll just share that with you. Some people who cannot do that, that this is a very good meditation, but you can also do, you know, there's an actual case that happened. This happens when you have negative thoughts in your mind. And this happened in a case in Hawaii. There was a fight in the husband and the wife. Big fight in the house. So the guy was so angry, he kicked the door and walked out of the house in a great fit of anger. And he went through in that area in Hawaii. He was going through a bunch of trees because it's a highly wooded area. And he went and absent-mindedly, because his mind was all so much of turmoil in his mind, that he picked those leaves that he saw on the trees, just picked here left and right and put them in his pocket. And he went for a long walk. Because as you know, if you go for a long walk, your mind quietens down. that's one thing. So when he went there, he went for a long while, and after a while he came to a place where the ambience was so nice. There was a stream. He came near the stream. The climate, the weather was perfect, and he could sit at the banks of that thing and dangle his legs into that stream. So he said, wow, you know, such a nice place. And he sat down. Because, you know, that's what you want. You have, your mind is so disturbed. You want to sit down in a quiet place. He did that. And the next thing he did, he took the leaves from his pocket. And he took one leaf after another. He had so many negative thoughts in his mind. He took the negative thought in his mind. He put it on the leaf and set the leaf down the river. And he did that many, many times. Each negative thought, he put it on the leaf and threw it down the river. And as he finished everything, his mind was so clear. He went back a real peaceful person, almost a saint. Because he spent long time over there. You know, so all when all the disturbances in your mind are cleared, then your mind is quiet. So, now how do you do this meditation thing? You don't have to go to Hawaii. It's expensive. But bring Hawaii into your mind. If you bring Hawaii into your mind and understand that, you know, see, it's like this. If you have a negative thought, write it down on a piece of paper, tear it up, burn it or throw it away. That's what you do. So just like that, this leaf. So imagine in your mind that you're taking a field trip somewhere and you've gone with the car up to a certain point. After that, you can't go anywhere. Therefore, you need to walk. And you're walking very slowly up the stairs and you're going to a place where it's very secluded. And then there you see the same, this river thing. And you're sitting down by it. And you're slowly putting the thoughts that you have in your mind, the disturbing thoughts inside. Don't do anything with your hands. Do everything in the mind. And slowly do that and you see that it works. I know there are so many kids in college who've tried this and it worked. So that is why I'm telling you. I'm just sharing that. Okay? Now we can do the other meditation, the Om meditation. Right? This is what you're used to.
Regarding to the guy in Hawaii, now, does that reflect on a negative thought also? Like when you have a negative thought, you can say, I'm going to take it and put in a leaf and throw it away?
Yes. By all means, do that. It's, you know, when you have a negative thought, put it on that leaf and throw it out. Let it cast it down. Let it go down the ocean.
I need to try it.
Yeah, because, see, remember, your nature is divine. Therefore, there is nothing that you should not be able to do. The infinite expresses through us. So all our problems, we impose them on ourselves. The ability that we have is amazing. Each one of us is, that's why each one of us is special. Because each one of us is part of the string. And remember that every one of us has some ability or the other. And we express it in some form. So we need the purpose of life is to bring that ability into the world. And serve the world. Serve the community with that ability. And so any negative thing comes, it is not you. It's not the real you. There is no negative thought in God. Impossible. I don't want such a God. There is no God and negativity never go together. Yeah, so, and can never be. And God is always love. There's no destruction. Impossible. Because otherwise, how can the string hold together? Just think about it. It's so common sense. If He is the string that holds everything around, how can one part of the string be destructive and another part? How can the string be destructive at all? It has to connect everything. So, that connecting, that love that connects everybody is that universal Lord. See, and that's why, you know, that is why people who have realized the soul, realize the truth, self-realized people, they know that everything is that. And they have no problem even going into the prisons and going, because they understand that everything is that, is the soul inside. Not even the guy who is sitting in the prison with his orange suit. But it's not him. Because the deep inner person in there is also a form of God. Unfortunately, the mind of that person is not properly set. And that is why the problem. You know, and therefore, and you know, the system of justice has to deal with that. It's not like, oh, I'm taking revenge upon somebody to do something. But it's the idea is that I have to do something so that that person does not hurt anybody else. That's the idea. This, see, and thoughts of revenge and everything else should never come into the mind. They're all negative thoughts. Only thoughts of peace and love, that's it. Because that's what God is, peace and love. Because that is the only thing that can bring everything together. How can you say that everything is God? Actually, the real truth is everything is God. There is no place that God is not. That's the truth. Because God is consciousness, and consciousness is everywhere. Even when there are no, when there are people here, two, three people here, even there, if there's nothing in between, God is there. Because consciousness is everything. Even the air that you breathe, every single thing in this universe is divine. The air, you know those five elements that you're familiar with, earth, water, fire, air, space, all these, they're all sacred. Why? You know that. I mean, you can't, what do you have here that is not part of the earth? Even this cotton has come from the earth. Everything that you wear, the polyester, everything is from the earth, borrowed from there. All the plants that you eat are from the earth. The animals from the earth. Every single thing has come from there. Water, if you don't have water, what will you do? Impossible. You know, you can give it a, very easy to give it a name, H2O. But it's such, so it's so important, more than that. Fire, the fire element is so important. Even the sun, without the heat of the sun, we can't do anything. So like that, every element, earth, water, fire, air, and the air we breathe, if you don't have oxygen, we are finished. Space, where can we exist? If there's no space, where will you exist? We all exist in space. The space exists in and through our body. Okay. See, that's another awesome thing. That space is a very close thing to what we call intangible God. You know, but you have to put intelligence into it. Then it becomes God. When there's intelligence, and unmanifested intelligence is God. And let me give you one more piece of information. All these manifestations of God that you see, the people who are realized, that means the full potency of God, of that unmanifested God, is in that person. That is why you can call that person God. See, and that is why that realization is a privilege, is everybody's privilege, if they reach up to it. Because, look at it, we have wandered away from home. God is home, but we have to go back home. And to go back home, we have to do all this job. We have to do all this, get back. Remember who we are, slowly. Remember that our nature is divine and move in that direction. By understanding that you are not this body. That means be less selfish. Don't identify only with this body. Understand that everything is that. So I do work for the community. When I do work for the community, I help the community. And I get rid of my selfishness. You know, there's a big thing. If you say, he did it, when you point, four fingers are pointing at you. The same, when you blame somebody, so many fingers are pointing, more fingers are pointing at you. But when you say, we did it, it makes such a nice thing. It's so nice. You share everything. So, okay. All right, thank you very much.